We're going to continue our study of Maseches Kedushin. And we're actually going to, we're going to skip around a little bit, just because I want to focus on certain Gemaras more than others. So I really actually want to move to Daf Hey. But before, so there's just a couple of lines of Gemara I thought you would find very interesting. No, we're staying on Daf Beis Amud Beis, and it's line 32. It's where it says, in the fifth word on the line should be abbreviation, the E by Yisem, above Aleph.
Where am I going to find it? Perfect, thank you.
So the Gemara asked a question before that we didn't see. I'm just going to paraphrase the Gemara's question. The Gemara's question was, why did the Mishnah have the language of shalosh derachim, that there are three ways to get married? Why use the word derech? The word derech, a way, so usually we refer to a derech as an actual physical way that you would walk, right? And you walk in Yerushalayim, there's a street called Derech Chavron. Why is it called Derech Chavron? Because if you stay straight on it, you'll get to Dechron. You'll get to Chavron. There's Derech Beit Lechem. If you stay straight on it, you're going to get to Beit Lechem. It's a way. Why would marriage be described that? With the word derech. So the Gemara gave one reason, and now the Gemara is going to offer another reason by the Ibayis Ema. If you want to say, and we're going to use this logic later on. So I want us to have this Gemara in our back pocket, and it's interesting in and of itself as well. The Ibayis Ema, if you want to say another answer to explain why the Mishnah used the word derech, hamani. Who's perhaps the author of our Mishnah? Perhaps the author of our Mishnah, because when we read our Mishnah, we never saw any names of a Tana. The Tanaim were the sages that wrote the Mishnayos. They were the authors of the statements in the Mishnah. Sometimes it says their name. You'll be reading a Mishnah, it says Rabbi Yehuda, Omer, Rabbi Meir, Beis Hillel, Beis Shammai. It says their name, and sometimes it doesn't. So many times, when it doesn't say their name, the Gemara tries to attribute who it possibly is. So Hamani, Reb Shimon. Maybe the author of our Mishnah is Rabbi Shimon, who was one of the Tanoim. He? The Tanya, because we learned in a separate Brisa, Rabbi Shimon Omer, Rabbi Shimon said as follows. Mipnei ma amra Torah. Why did the Torah state, in the context of marriage, the pasuk we saw in our introduction to the Masechta, ki yikach ish isha, when a man will take a woman. Why did the Torah phrase it that way? V'lo ksiv, and the Torah did not write, he silakeich isha le'ish, when a woman is taken to a man. Why did the Torah phrase it that way? And obviously, when the Gemara is asking this question, it's that we believe, and this is something that you can't say enough, we believe that the Torah was given from Hashem to Moshe Rabbeinu, word for word, letter for letter. That God divinely told Moshe Rabbeinu exactly what to write. So if God told Moshe to write, ki yikach ish isha, it must have been for a reason. So Reb Shimon is posing it. Why does it say when a man takes a woman? Why not say when a woman is taken by a man? So he answers, Mipnei shedarko shel ish lachzar al ha'isha. The mannerism and the way of a man is to go after a woman. Ve'ein darko shel isha lachzar al ish. And it's not the normal way, at least in Reb Shimon's time of society, for women to search out men. And he gives a mashal, he gives a parable to understand this. La'adam she'avda lo aveda. To a person who loses something. Let's say you lose something. Right? Even if it's your iPhone that has the app on it that'll tell you where it is. Mi chozer al mi. Who looks for who? Does your iPhone get up and start looking for you? Bal aveda machzer al aveda. So no, it's the owner of the lost object who searches for the lost object. What does that have to do with marriage? Parshas Bereishis. Chava was created, the first woman was created from a lost rib of the first man, of Adam. So Adam lost something. And if you lose something, you go and find it. And so from the beginning of creation, at least to a certain point in society, it was normal within human nature that man will go out and search for a woman, not woman would go out and search for a man. And that's why the Torah formulates marriage as ki yikach ish isha. So Reb Shimon says, since it's the derech, since it's the normal mannerism for men to search out women, that's why the Torah says ki yikach ish isha. And that's why our Mishnah, when talking about marriage, uses the word derech. Derech is a way, it's symbolic of the mannerism, the normal mannerism. Again, it may have changed in our time. Our women are a little more independent. I can say independent, you can say what you want to say. Even just the fact that they can earn a living in a way that sometimes there are many women, perhaps you know some of them, that can earn much more money than their husband can. I know some husbands that are stay-at-home dads, and the wife is the breadwinner. In the culture of the times of the Mishnah, I mean, for 200 years ago, that 100 years ago, that hardly existed. You know, go back and ask any of those women if their great-grandmothers were doing that. So the normal approach, at least when it came to shidduchim, when it came to marriage, was that men would search out the women. But I think what's important is that Reb Shimon is reading this into the explanation of the pasuk, and this is actually a little bit of an introductory point to the Gemara that we're going to be moving to now, because we're going to be talking, we're going to start fleshing out some of these ideas that we had in the Mishnah when we threw out the idea of kesef, you get married with money. Now we're going to shift in and try to understand how it actually happens. So what we're going to do now is we're going to turn to Daf Hey Amid Beis, which is 5b. We'll see. We'll see. The goal wasn't to make a siyum. So if that was your goal, then we could talk about that in private. But I want to try to highlight certain Gemaras, perhaps more than others.
5b,
right in the middle of the page, line 24, where it says Tanu Rabbanan in the middle of the page. Tanu Rabbanan Ketzad Bekesa.
Wow!
So Tanu Rabbanan is one of the classical ways that the Gemara always introduces a brisa with. There are different phrases that the Gemara can introduce a brisa. What's a brisa? Let's answer that. So the Mishnah was authored by Tanoim, as we'd mentioned before. The Tanoim were the sages that basically lived approximately, this is not a history class, approximately 100 years before the Common Era and 200 years after the Common Era, about a 300-year period of time. The last, you would say it's about the last 100 or so years, a little more, of the second Beis HaMikdash, through the time period of the destruction of the Second Temple in the year 70, and 150 years after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. These sages living in the land of Israel, known as Tanaim, and author of the Mishnah. The Mishnah was edited by Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi in about the year 220. He decided to write it down. It was prohibited. There's a halacha that says that you're not allowed to write down the oral Torah. Our belief is, Orthodox Jews believe, that at the Har Sinai, two things were given to the Jewish people. The written Torah, the five books of the Bible, and as well as the 24 books of the Bible, the written Torah, and the oral Torah, the Torah Sheba'al Peh, that is the explanation of the written Torah. The fact that, how do you know what a mezuzah is? The Torah just says you should put these words on your doorposts. What does that mean? Should I take a marker and write out Shema on my doorpost? Maybe. How do we know that it's supposed to be a little piece of parchment that has the first paragraph of Shema and the second paragraph of Shema? The Torah Sheba'al Peh tells us that. We all put on tefillin. How do we know that tefillin are supposed to be black? Maybe I like purple. Where does it say anywhere in the Torah that they should be black? That they should be square? That they should actually go above my hairline and not smack in between my eyes? The Karaites, who only agreed with the Torah Shebichzav, they said, Beinei Necha, you put these things Beinei Necha, so they put them between their eyes. Al Yadecha, on your hand, they put the tefillin on their hand. Now, I've never seen Karaite tefillin. If they're using square and black tefillin, that they're cheating, because again, that's part of our the oral Torah. The oral Torah says al yadacha means on your forearm next to your heart. Bein einecha means on top of your head, above your hairline. That's the Torah Shebaal Peh. You're not officially, you're not allowed to write that down. That was all those halachas were passed down from Rebbe to student orally. The reason to not write it down is because it was much, it's much more intimate that way. It's much more, if you're on the level to remember it, so the Torah Shebaal Peh is only meant for the Jewish people. The Torah Shebaal, the written Torah, is meant for all. That's why when they came into the land of Israel, they actually wrote down the Torah in these huge stones, basically for all to see. And it's totally okay. You want to have a chavrusa with one of your coworkers at work who's not Jewish? Study the Bible, Old Testament, all you want. The Torah Shebaal Peh, that's considered to be reserved for the Jewish people. And there's actually a prohibition to... I would not be able to teach this class to non-Jews. My class that I give on Tuesday, I probably could, because there we're just explaining, we're learning Navi, we're learning the written Bible, so that, you know, anyone could come. So here, you know, I'm not...
Following up on the history, the Babylonian exile was what year?
The Babylonian exile was approximately, in terms of common era, approximately 586 BCE to 516 BCE.
So why is the common version of the Talmud, not the Jerusalem Talmud, why is it called the Babylonian Talmud? If the Mishnah and the Gemara was written later.
Oh, because the problem was is that, you know, basically what are we doing here right now? The State of Israel was established in 1948 and we're sitting pretty in Westchester. You know, why?
But why are we here?
Wait, one second. We're here because, I don't know, life is pretty good over here. The carpet's very thick and it's very comfortable in Westchester. I just moved in. I like it. The people who went to Babel, 80% of the Jewish community never moved back to Israel.
So the rabbis were in Babylon?
A lot of the rabbis were in Israel. But the regular people were still in Babel. The Jewish community stayed, most of it stayed in Babel. They didn't come back when they, even though they built the second Beis HaMikdash, right? Can you imagine them building the third Beis HaMikdash? And people, like, we keep talking about, we want Mashiach. You know, they built the second Beis HaMikdash and the Jews still stayed in Babel. Maybe they visited for Yontif, they took, you know, they bought an apartment, you know, but they still, it was nice in Babel. They stayed in Babel. Eventually, even the rabbis moved, you know, the center of education shifted back to Babel. But getting back, this is all an introduction to describe what a Braisa is.
Yeah.
So the Tanaim were those sages who lived at the time of the Mishnah. Rabbi Yehuda Anasi edited the Mishnah into the six orders of the Mishnah, but not every teaching was incorporated. He was trying to organize it, and not everything made it in. Just like when you're an editor, you might have a valuable piece of information, but whatever, it didn't fit topically. So the word Braisa is made up of two words. Isa means a teaching, and bar means something that's out. It's a teaching that was out. What was it out of? It was out of the Mishnah. It wasn't included in the Mishnah, but it was still authored by a Tana. That's why with the Aramaic word, if you ever see the Aramaic translation of the Torah, is called Unkelus. It's usually printed on the side of the Chumash. So if you ever see where it says, let's say it says Yosef ben Yaakov, it'll say Yosef bar Yaakov. The Aramaic translation of the word ben is bar. Because a son is the outcome of the father. A son comes out of the father. It's like an outgrowth of the father. That's why it has the word bar, because bar means out. So a braisa is the teaching that was left out. But they still discuss, the Talmud discusses braisas all the time. If you ever have a conflict between a Mishnah and a braisa, so perhaps, you know, maybe you can make the argument that a Mishnah is more authoritative. But so Tana Rabbanan introduces a braisa. So that's where we're beginning. And we're harping back to our discussion of kesef, that you could get married with money. Where the Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan ketzad b'kesef. So how does it actually work with money? Our Mishnah told us that you can get married with silver. How does it work? The braisa is asking that question. So it tells you, nasom la kesef. He gives her, the man gives the woman silver, Oshava kesef, or something that's worth silver, something that has value. the Amar La, and he says to her the following verbal declaration in conjunction with the giving. Hare at mikudeshesli. Option number one is he says, you are hereby sanctified unto me. Option two, hare at meuresetli. You are betrothed to me. Option three, hare at li li'intu. You are, behold, you are for me for a wife. Li'intu means for a wife. So he gives her something of value. He says one of these three languages. Hare zu mikudeshes. They're married. And we're going to learn, and we already introduced this concept, that it can't just be in a vacuum. Right? It has to take place in front of witnesses. You can't just in your backyard, you're feeling romantic, you pull out a ring, and you say to your girlfriend, Hareat Mikudeshasli. It's not enough. If you planned in advance, you knew that this was, you planned this whole thing at the restaurant, and you want to have it to be Kiddushin, and you called two of your friends, and they're at the other table, and they're watching, so then that could be Kiddushin. Now, none of us do that, because we usually do Kiddushin at the official wedding.
It's two or three witnesses.
Two witnesses. The Torah, when the Torah introduces us the concept of witnesses, the Torah says the phrase, two or three, which is puzzling. Why? Obviously, if two work, three work. So the Gemara in Maseches Makos deals with that question. And one of the basic answers is that sometimes you have a group of witnesses, when you have a group of witnesses that come together, and that it's like all for one and one for all. So if you have two witnesses and one of them turns out to be a bad apple, not a bad apple, let's say one of them turns out to be a relative of one of the litigants. So if you're a relative of one of the litigants, you can't be a witness. Right, my father cannot testify about me, even though he's the most upstanding person I know is my father. He can't be testify about me. We can't trust him. A father will not always tell the truth if it's a son. If his son is on the line, we know that it's personal. So, if you had a group of two witnesses and one turns out to be a relative, the case is done. When the Torah says three, if three people came together and they all were witnesses together, and one of them turns out to be a relative, he might ruin it for the whole group, because they were saying their testimony together, and that we might learn that out from it says two or three. So here, the first case in the Braisa is man gives something to the woman, and he says the right phrases. Right? We're used to the phrase of Hareat Mikudeshesli. That's what we all said at our weddings. But any of these other phrases of Hareat Meuresetli, Hareat Leilintu, these would work. Continues the Braisa. Aval hi shenosna. What happens if she gives the money? The amra hi, and she says the declaration. So she says, I am hereby betrothed to you. Here's money. I'm giving you a ring, and I am hereby betrothed to you. And the man is silent the whole time. Says the Braisa. What is that? The Braisa actually says what she says. She says, right, so go back to Aval. Aval hi shenosna, if she gives it, the amrahi, and she also says the declaration of Hareini mikudeshes lecha, I am sanctified to you. Hareini mu'reset lecha, I am betrothed to you. Hareini lecha le'intu, I am for you as a wife, eina mikudeshes. That's not kiddushin. That's not kiddushin, period. The Braisa ends the Braisa. So the Braisa is telling us two extreme cases, it seems, where either the man is giving the money and the man is saying the verbal declaration, that equals a Jewish marriage. If she gives the money and she says the verbal declaration, no good on the marriage. It doesn't smell like it, doesn't taste like it. That's not a Jewish marriage.
Isn't that clear from just the Torah? Why do you need this? So the Torah just says a man acquires a woman and takes a woman. It doesn't say a woman takes a man.
Oh.
This is a woman taking a man, so why even have this?
So Josh's question is, What is this Braisa telling me? I know this already. The Torah says they might be coming for slichus already. The Torah says ki yikach esh isha. So that tells me that the man has to be the active player.
Yep.
So you're saying you're a strict linguistic. You're seeing the words in the Bible. The Bible says that it has to be the man takes the woman. So what do we need this Braisa for? So, on the surface level, the Braisa is giving me already some information I need to know. Meaning, when the Torah says ki yikach ish isha, so how do I know that he actually has to give her something and that he has to say something? So the Braisa is explaining the Mishnah, not the Mishnah. The Braisa is explaining the Pasuk. The Pasuk gave us this catchphrase of ki yikach ish isha. How does it? Marv at 10 o'clock. Followed by Slichot.
Okay, now, I thought on the first daf, the language basically was that when they talk about the woman is acquired,
right?
The implication was she had to be a willing participant.
Correct.
But here, that's no longer being discussed.
No. So that we the Gemara is taking, at this point, we're taking that as one of the givens.
Okay.
That in order, and we did that last time, that the fact that the Mishnah opens with the word Ha'isha, that sends the message home that when it comes to entering into the marriage, she has to be willing. She has to be a willing participant, and if not, there's nothing to talk about. So the Braisa seems to have these two extreme cases, where either the man is giving and speaking, or the woman is giving and speaking. If the man gives and speaks, it's a good kiddushin. If the woman gives and speaks, it's not. Rav Papa is about to ask a challenging question. And that's why it's introduced by the phrase. There are different ways to introduce questions in the Gemara. Anytime you see the following phrase, maskif, maskif is a question based on logic. So this is Rav Papa. He was sitting in the Beis Medrash, like we're sitting in a Beis Medrash. Someone got up in the Beis Medrash in Bavel, and someone said over this Braisa. Rav Papa was quite intelligent, and he's thinking over the Braisa in his head, and all of a sudden he comes up with his own question. As opposed to sometimes you come to a Rav Papa is already an Amora. That's why he's in the Gemara. He's one of the sages who lived in Bavel a couple of hundred years after the Mishnah. He's hearing this Braisa quoted out loud, and now he's thinking. Sometimes an Amora will ask a question with some ammo. How do you ask a question with some ammo? You ask a question with some ammo is, how could the Braisa say this when there's a Braisa over there that says something else? Or how could you have the audacity to say that as your own statement when you're contradicting a Mishnah somewhere else? That's when you're asking, and that's asked in a different way, sometimes with the word mesve or esve. It means you're asking a question where you have a higher source of proof on your side to fight your question. But a maskif is a question based on logic. So here's Rav Papa. Maskif la Rav Papa. Rav Papa challenged this Braisa as follows. Taima, the reason why it appears to be an effective marriage is denasan hu, because the man is the one giving, the omar hu, and the man is the one saying the verbal declaration. Ha, that implies Nasan hu, if he would give the money, the amra hi, but she would say the verbal declaration, eina mekudeshes. Right? According to the first side of the Braisa, it appears that he has to bat two for two for it to be a good kiddushin. If he gives the money, but she does the verbal declaration, it shouldn't work. But now he says, eima seifa. I want to use that same logic to the Seifa. The Seifa means like the Sof, the end part of the Mish, the end part of the Braisa. Aval hi shenasna lo, in the case where she gives the money, the Omra hi, and she says the declaration, lo avi kiddushin. What does that imply? Taima denasna hi v'omra hi. That implies the reason why it wasn't a good kiddushin is because she gave it and she said it. Ha, that implies nasan hu, if he would give it v'omra hi and she would say it, Havi Kedushin. Meaning the second part of the Seifa sounds like it's only a problem when it's 0 for 2. When she's the one giving and she's the one saying. But what about if he would give and she would say? Then it should be good. So depending on which angle you start with, you're getting at a different conclusion. So Rav Papa, I think what he's really saying is, I don't understand the flow of the Braisa. Because the Braisa, by setting it up this way, the Braisa doesn't flow. Because if you would have only told me the first part of the Braisa, he'd be fine. And he would say that you must go, the man must have the amira. He must say the words and must give the money. Anything that's not that will not be a good kiddushin. The fact that the Braisa introduces us to the flip side, to where she is both giving and she is saying, that he just told us a logical contradiction. So that's his maskil. It's a logical question based on his own personal logic. So the Gemara is going to attempt one answer and fail, and attempt two more answers, and both of them are considered to be successful. So in total, the Gemara is giving three answers. The first one's a fail, because the first answer, towards the end of the narrow line, the first answer of the Gemara says, Reisha Dafka. The opening statement of the Braisa, the first half of the Braisa, that was specific. That was, the word selection was specific. Seifa Kidei Nazba. And the end of the Braisa, the word choice, it was like an incidental word choice. It was not a carefully chosen word choice. And there's sometimes, and Rashi actually explains this, there's sometimes where in a long text of a Mishnah or a Braisa, there might be a phrase that's not essential. There might be a phrase that's not essential. But the Gemara attacks this immediately by saying, V'tani Seifa Milsa de Sastra Lalaresha? Will the end of a Braisa teach something that contradicts the first half? It makes no sense. So you can't use this logic. You can't say that it's an incidental phrase. The fact that it's there and it's contradicting, there's something else is up here, and you can't get away with this light answer. You can't get away with this answer of saying it's just incidental. Because the author of the Braisa, whoever the author was, would never include a statement at the beginning and then have a statement at the end that contradicts. It doesn't make sense. And so this first answer of the Gemara is rejected. Elahachi ka'amar, rather, this is what the Braisa was trying to tell us. And we're about to see two answers. Answer number one. Nosan hu va'amar hu, in a case where the man gives it and the man says the verbal declaration, pshita dehavi kiddushin. It's obvious that that is a good case of kiddushin. That's like all of our weddings. We gave the money to our wives. We made the verbal declaration. Nosan hu v'amra hi, the case of where he would give it and she would say it, nasa kimi, it is as if, it is as faulty and as not effective as the case of shenasna hi v'amra hi, in the case where she would give it and she would say it, velohavi kiddushin. Meaning the flow of the Braisa, the reason why Rav Papa is noticing that middle case, the middle case is, you're supposed to notice the middle case, but segue it to the last case, that any middle case is treated like the last case. That just like the last case, her saying and her giving, that's not an effective. So too, in a case where he gives and she says, that's also not effective.
So this is contrary to what we were talking about a few months ago, right? Where if either was okay, if either happened, if she gave the gift and he said, she gave the money and he said the vows, or he gave the money and she said the vows, either of those you said I thought was acceptable, now you're saying they're not, maybe I misunderstood you.
I don't know.
Unless it was in the first class, which I was in.
I think you said, if she gives the money and she makes the vows, it's no kiddushin. If it's 50-50, she does one and he does one, I thought you said it was...
No, Rav Papa originally saying, I mean, because it depends what your vantage point is. If you're looking from the first part of the Braisa, right, it's no good.
Right.
If you're looking from the last part of the Braisa, it seems to be good, which is a contradiction of logic.
Right.
So
that's
Rav Papa's question. So this answer seemingly is satisfactory for Rav Papa, in that the reason why there's an ambiguity is to compare this middle case to the last case.
So this is now addressing his...
Correct. Gotcha. We're addressing his point.
Why are they just assuming the middle case is like the last case? Why can't I just assume the middle case is like the first case?
Because I wouldn't have had to have the last case. If I only wanted to teach you, if I only taught you the first case,
I got it. I understand. Then you'd say that's
right.
It.
So now we're going to go in a totally different direction. Yeah. and give a different answer, and we're actually going to give some level of validity to these middle cases. And we're going to introduce a concept that we might not be familiar with yet, but we'll see it. So now the Gemara, this is our second time tonight we have this phrase, vi'i ba'is ema, and if you want to say, meaning an alternative answer, answer number two, is as follows. How do I handle this discrepancy? Nasan hu va'amar hu, in a case where he gives it and he says it, mikudeshes. They are definitely married. Nasna hi va'amar hi, in a case where she gives the kesef and she says the declaration, ain't mikudeshes. That's also that's definitely not good. But in the middle ground case, nasan hu, if he would give the money, va'amra hi, and she would make the verbal declaration, what's the law? Sveikahi. It's a doubt. We're in doubt of what their marital status is. V'chayishinon midrabanon, and we are concerned on a level of derabanon. What does Rashi say that means? If you take a look at chayishinon midrabanon in Rashi, I'll help you get there.
Here, Taishina Midrabanan, Rashi. Here,
Taishina.
You have it. One more page.
Here. Okay. Rashi says, what does it mean to be concerned on a level of Dirabanan? He says, She'im ba'acher, the Kitsha. If after this doubt case, some other knight in shining armor runs in and actually betroths her, Sricha get mishnehem. We would require her to get a divorce document from both men. Shemelohayu shalarishon kiddushin. Because maybe that first guy who she had that funny kiddushin where he gave the money but she gave the declaration, maybe that wasn't a good kiddushin. V'chalu kiddushay sheni, and the kiddushin of the second guy was good. O shema shalarishon kiddushin velo shalsheni. Maybe the first guy's kiddushin was good and the second guy's wasn't. So it's a situation of doubt, and so at a situation of doubt, so if there was no other guy to come along, so what would we say? Best case scenario is just get married again. What Rashi's doing is Rashi's showing an extreme case is that if in the interim someone else came in and did kiddushin with her, so now we're not sure who she's married to. So here I'll leave you with a question which is going to haunt you for the holiday season, because I don't think we're meeting again. Because Yom Kippur and then Sukkot. So the question is, why does it say, and this is a linguistical question, why does it say Sveikahi v'chayishinon midrabanan? Why is it only a rabbinic doubt? If this is marriage we're talking about, and we're in doubt, that should be a biblical doubt. So that we'll address that question, God willing.